What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. No one's joining me because I'm alone, but that's how it is. But I have a guest, not a co-host. I have a guest, Cooley Callahan of Polyarc. How are you doing today?
Hi, Joe. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Yeah, doing really good. Just excited to chat games and Polyarc and Moss and all sorts of other fun stuff.
Yeah, for the people who don't know who Polyarc is or who Moss is, give us all the info. Give us the sales pitch. What is Moss? Who is Polyarc? What are you guys doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Polyarc is a small indie studio based in Seattle, Washington. We are made up of a bunch of industry veterans from all over. The first game that Polyarc shipped was, and I guess only game that Polyarc has shipped, is Moss, which came out on the PSVR in 2018. And it was, it turned out to be a beloved app. And the Moss game is itself is, it's a fairy tale world where you play as a reader who, basically is a spirit entity in this world of Moss. And you befriend a small woodland creature, Quill, who discovers a powerful relic that enables her to be able to see you and interact with you. And it's good because you meet Quill at a time when she's looking for her uncle. And so you go on a grand adventure together to go find her uncle and uncover some of the mysteries of the world of Moss together.
And that was the first game, correct?
That's the first game. And you're right. And I don't know if I mentioned it. It's all VR. We're a VR studio.
Yes, I played this one on PSVR. Unfortunately, I never beat it. I ended up getting rid of my PSVR before I had a chance to finish it. But I know the sequel is on the way.
That's right.
What is going on with the sequel? Tell us about it.
Yeah, so the sequel picks up directly where the first story left off. No spoilers. I'll try to keep spoilers to a minimum for those who haven't played Moss. But so you're picking up at the end of Quill's initial adventure, and the stakes are raised. In the first game, you're chasing down Sarfog the Serpent, and so once that climax is resolved, you realize that that Sarfog was just sort of the beginning. There's a greater danger in the world that is even more immediate and even more dangerous. And so you'll be meeting up with Quill's uncle to figure out what to do next. And the tension is certainly dialed up a little bit, but it's still Moss. You're still going to be on an epic adventure with Quill, and you're still going to be building your friendship with her. I think one of the things that I joined Polyarc in 2019, so mm-hmm. I didn't work on Moss 1, but I love the game, and I have friends who work at Polyarc, and I really admired what they were doing, and I think Moss in VR and the relationship the player has with Quill is really something special, and we've tried to just build on that and create a deeper relationship with her, and you're going to be feeling more emotions, and relationship is going to be even strained sometimes. You'll be put through challenges together that you'll have to, both you and Quill will have to make choices. And so I think VR is the best medium for that, because you really feel like you're there with her. And, that's something you can't get in another media. So, I'm really excited about what players are going to experience too.
What are the challenges in developing for VR as opposed to developing for flat games?
Well, it's a huge difference. I think first and foremost, like, movement is so different, right? Like, people are very, you get sick easily, right? Like, get nauseous and uncomfortable very easily. And that was something that, the Polyarc crew learned early on in their prototyping, was that Danny Bulla, actually, who's one of the co-founders of Polyarc, he was the design lead on the first Moss. He has a really he doesn't really tolerate VR super great, which is kind of a blessing in disguise, because that's a lot of people, and so we really quickly realized, or they realized, that being seated, not moving, is huge. And so that kind of, like, when you look at the video game design equation, right? Like, if you're stationary, it really narrows it down, which is good. I think that is actually really good. And that's one of the things I like about VR is I came from working on Destiny, and Destiny was like, talk about a complex game. Like, holy cow. Like, that game is quite a feat, that it's even exists. But, you know, to do anything in that game, it's like, one of the analogies I really liked was that, Bungie is like a big ship. And to steer that ship, it just takes a lot of time. And you need to be very deliberate about where you want to steer that ship, because you can only steer it so much. Working on a VR game and an indie studio with much less people, it's like we're in a little speedboat. We can like zip around and we're on a jet ski. We're like living it up.
Going off jumps.
Going off jumps. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, that's a big difference. It's definitely been a challenge. Like, I'm an environment artist and I specialize in building levels, and I really enjoy level design as well. And there's a big learning curve for me in terms of understanding what's important in a MOS level. Like, a MOS level is so much simpler than like a Destiny map, for example.
I can imagine. Yeah, it's a slight difference between the two.
So different. Yeah, it's like with Destiny, it's huge, right? You got like huge level, you got tons of movement, and then with MOS, you know, it's a much more constrained, and it's more about like playing Tetris. Like, you need to get everything to fit together perfectly, whereas with Destiny, it's like, oh, if this doesn't fit, we'll just make another area, we'll, you know, give things space to breathe. And in fact, that was good, because like we wanted the map to feel big, and you know, Destiny's a big open world game, so yeah, it really is like it's night and day. But I wanted that shift when I left Bungie to go to Polyarch. I was really interested in, like I was saying, I wanted to be more on that like agile, faster moving team. So
you wanted to be part of something that was overall doing more. It seems like you have the freedom to do a lot more on a smaller project like MOS, as opposed to something huge like Destiny, where there's so many moving parts.
Totally. And I think Bungie did a really good job in giving people a say in how that stuff goes, but it's just the nature of the beast, right? No matter how, you know, progressive their work practices may be, you know, there's still got to be somebody making decisions at the end of the day. And so this was an opportunity for me to be kind of in the room a little bit more, and grow myself as a game developer, which was really exciting. And I have a lot of confidence in VR, just because I think that, you know, MOS and Quill are a great example of what's possible. And I'm pretty excited about like immersive entertainment and immersive experiences, and even like immersive artwork. I think that there's going to be a lot of really interesting content that challenges our expectations for what media can be in the next 10 years or so. And so I wanted to kind of like, I think like we're speculating a little bit. We're like surfers out in the ocean. We're like, I think that's going to be a wave. And so like, let's set up to try to catch that one. And so that's what we're doing. And we're hoping that it pays off. So
do you think VR is on the cusp of just exploding into pop culture? Do you think we're about there, or do you think it's still a few years off?
Still a few years off, I think. But we're getting really close. With the popularity of the Quest, and I mean, I think Oculus has a great strategy in terms of going more, like just kind of reducing the constraints of VR. Like, you can just put on the headset, you just put on the Quest headset and you turn it on, and now you're in VR. And I think that was a big step in getting people into more into the sphere, right? To turn more people into enthusiasts. Yeah. It still kind of is in that enthusiast zone, I think. But I think that was just a really big step for us. And, you know, Sony's working on a new headset, which is really exciting. They've got their own angle on it too. Like, they're not approaching things from the mobile perspective. They're approaching it from like the console at home gaming center experience. And so you can just know that like, they're going to be producing an incredible piece of hardware that we can't wait to start making content for. And so
has there been any word on when the PSVR 2 is coming? I haven't paid as much attention to it as I wanted to, just because I'm scared of how much it's going to cost.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's been any news. I know Upload VR has had a few articles about it recently. I know that they've shown off that they're using or they're pursuing a touch controller type input, which is pretty standard these days, right? So you'll have two controllers that are custom built for the headset, or at least that's when Sony, you know, announced that they were working on it. They had some graphics and some images of those controllers.
Yeah, I saw those.
Yeah, and I think that's cool to see, like, okay, yeah, there's like some standards that are being sort of like the different manufacturers are recognizing, yeah, this is the best input method, which, yeah, that just takes time to figure out, right? Like, I think it's just that anytime we've got something new, there's going to be like different versions until we kind of settle into the thing that is like the best design. Just kind of like exposes itself over time as more iteration happens.
What kind of examples could you give of that?
I think the touch controllers are the perfect example. Like, we're play testing on the PSVR in our studio because that's what we're shipping on. And sometimes even just having play testers come in and use the DualShock, who are used to the touch controllers. It's interesting to see how it's almost like it's like subconscious. Like, people just get the touch controllers, and then there's a little bit more coaching that has to happen with the, not all the time, but sometimes we'll have to kind of coach the player a little bit more on how to use the DualShock. And so
that's interesting. You would think it would be easier to just pick up and play with the DualShock, considering that's kind of like the standard for the gaming community, is just a standard controller. And then it would be more difficult to learn using the Move controllers. Stuff
totally.
Like that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think it's like, it's one of the, like, this could be like a design case study of just like how we adapt and how we just as human beings grow to kind of become proficient with what's around us and what we're using, and how quickly we can like, you know, struggle with the previous design that was maybe good, right? Maybe it was a great design, maybe even better, but we've moved on and now we kind of prefer this thing. And the seated kind of like, I'm on my couch and I've got my headset on mode of VR, I think is still going to be valid. I think we'll still make Moss this way and people will still enjoy Moss as a sort of more like quote unquote seated experience. But yeah, it's evolving and it's changing. And thankfully for us, I think the design principles of Moss, which are like, it's all about reaching into the world. It's all about, you know, your relationship with Quill. Those things can stand the updates, right? Those things can stand to like, they'll still be successful even if we, you know, if VR changes and evolves. I think Moss will always have a place. Or at least I hope it will always have a place as, you know, a fan favorite and as a place where people were like, wow, okay, I get VR now, like really feel a connection to Quill, and you know, I love petting her and doing all of these puzzles together, and when she's happy, you know, I get a lot of joy out of giving her a high five and that kind of stuff.
Something I loved about Moss is the fact that being a seated game, it was just a game. There was no like massive gimmick to it, there was no tricks, or it was just a really, really solid gaming experience in the VR space. And that's what more people need to do with VR, instead of let me make stuff that you just swing your arms around and look like a fool. We need more more core gaming experiences in VR, like Moss, where it's just a solid gaming experience and there's no tricks, no frills. It's just good stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I think the more VR becomes popular and the more people realize they can make money at making VR games, the more we're going to see. VR is such an interesting, like, we have so many of what you're talking about, right? We have those like gimmicky, like, they're kind of interesting, right? Like, maybe interesting experiences for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, but it's not a game.
Yeah.
You're not like, you know, at work, you know, thinking like, oh, I can't wait to get home and beat that mission tonight. No, were like, oh, like I can't wait to like hop on and you know, play some like multiplayer with my friends or something like that. So yeah, VR has some ways to go in that regard. But I like that we can make simple games in VR, and simple games are appealing because Moss is a pretty simple game. It's like, you know, you've got basic combat, you know, you're solving puzzles. But because it's in VR, it's a totally new experience. And so we can kind of get away with making a simpler game that maybe, like if we were going to make and sell Moss as a 2D game, I think we'd kind of just fall into that, the ocean of games that are coming out, the ocean of indie games. And like, we'd have to do something else creative to stand out, whether that would just be really strong marketing campaign or, you know, having some other, you know, really compelling thing about our game. But that's tough. Like how, like you have to kind of invent that, you have to build that thing. And with VR, it's like, okay, VR is the thing that is going to sell it for us. We just need to make a good game. We just need to do the thing that we've been spending our whole careers doing, but now in this different media. And I think that's one of the reasons I really liked Polyarc, was like, I saw, because they all quit Bungie when I was still there, and I was still a little bit early in my career, and I was watching what they were doing from afar, very interested. And then when I saw Moss was successful, I was like, oh yeah, these guys, they know what they're doing. I'm in. I wanna help make this experience.
That's awesome. It's yeah. Really cool that you guys all came from the same place.
Yeah, we were going to like Sounders games and stuff, Seattle Sounders, which is the MLS team here in Seattle. So we go snowboarding together. So it's pretty fun to like have the CEO come out to your birthday party and just hang out.
So. I don't think I've ever had one of my bosses come to a birthday party.
Yeah,
my birthdays are boring. I'm 40. I don't have any fun at birthdays anymore.
I feel you. Yeah, I haven't celebrated in a while. So I think maybe just being all locked up and cooped up, COVID times, it was like, hey, let's go to a patio. We're all vaccinated.
How has COVID impacted development on Moss?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's been a big change for us. I think in some ways, you know, it's been a real challenge. But in other ways, we've found processes that really work for us. We had to go full work from home, you know. I still remember back in March when it was all happening. Corinne, one of our another artist on the team, she was like, hey, I'm just gonna start quarantining just because I'm gonna be traveling. And then I think it was literally next day, everything was shut down. And so we had a work from home setup already in place, so we were able to use that for the time being. But video game development is very very collaborative, and so we didn't want to miss out on that. So we still spend a lot of time in Discord. We still do a lot of play tests. We do play tests in the office, and then we stream them on Discord so that everybody can watch the play tester and take their own notes and ask questions. And that's been pretty great because we just need to watch people play the game. Like we can have all of our assumptions about what is working and what isn't working, but then like somebody can come in and get stuck in the first level and we're like, oh shit. Like, can I swear? Sorry.
Oh, you could swear. It's fucking fine.
All right. Yeah. So yeah, that's, so we still have to do all that stuff. But thankfully, you know, we got the vaccines out, so we can do the in-person stuff safely, which is really important. And we can still follow the state guidelines for Washington. And so, yeah, we're slowly kind of like, as people become more comfortable, it's completely up to the employee. You know, we're work from home indefinitely. But there have been some people coming into the office, here and there, and it's great. It's, a lot of spontaneous conversations happen, and you can just look over at someone's screen and get excited and have a conversation and help solve problems. And I think that's I miss that part of game development.
Socializing and humanity.
Yeah, exactly right. It's like, huh, turns out I need that.
People are okay sometimes. Yeah. They are tolerable. Sometimes I just, you know, they're decent people out there. They exist.
Yep. Yeah. If you go on the internet, you might not believe it, but it's true.
Oh man. The internet is a cesspool of humanity.
Yeah, you gotta approach it with a grain of salt.
What's some of the fun trolling that you guys have had come out about Moss? Like any like specific dickheads out there that have caught your attention of yeah, just being idiots?
Totally. I mean, anytime there's like an announce stream, like we did our we like built our announce trailer, and you know, shout out to Chris for doing an awesome job on that. Chris Alderson, he's awesome. You know Chris. You got a chance to talk to him.
Yep, but, he was on a couple years ago for the first game.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got a lot of really fun stories about Moss. Yeah, so he worked on the trailer, and then, you know, we came out at Stoney's State of Play. It was the first thing they showed, which we were like, whoa, it's the first thing. And of course, this is the comments, right? And the Twitch stream were all like a lot of good stuff, but I think the one that I saw that I really liked the most was Rat Souls. People were just spamming Rat Souls in the chat. And Quill's a mouse. She's not a rat. Thank you. But yeah, that one stuck out to me.
Rat Souls. Oh my lord. Are you guys gonna put a rat in the game just to screw with them now?
An evil
villain rat.
That sounds really cool. We don't have any plans for a rat right now, but like the Moss universe is big, and I hope we could tell stories. But what's the rat from Charlotte's Web?
Oh,
you remember,
man,
that character?
I don't remember. I'm too old to remember that.
Okay,
my aging brain.
I want like that archetype, basically like garbage king rat character. That would be fun.
That'd be awesome. Oh man. Mm-hmm. you mentioned it briefly before about Moss potentially being a 2D game. Is that something you guys have ever considered, is bringing it to non-VR platforms?
That conversation does happen, occasionally. Nothing concrete, really. It's all just kind of an exploration. A lot of people have brought that up, to us and asked us, hey, like, why haven't you done this? It seems like an easy win. And I'm not sure we're as convinced it's an easy win. I think that we know that there's some R&D that we would need to do to just first off get it, you know, like we would need to figure out what the controls are. Like how are you going to be reaching into the world and grabbing things? So there's a little bit of figuring out to do. But I think there's something there. I think that there could be something really cool about having a 2D way to interface with the world of Moss that still feels like Moss. I think that will be it's interesting, but I think what we've really focused on is the magic of VR.
Yeah.
It's just that the magic of having Quill being right there in front of you and being able to interact with her is the most important thing. So it comes up and we have a lot of questions about it. It's not proven for us, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. We'd have to prove it.
I'm just going to throw it out there. Quill on the Switch would be magic.
That sounds cool. That sounds pretty cool. Cool to work with Nintendo. I mean, we're all big fans, so yeah.
And then selfishly, I would like to see it on Xbox too, but that's just me. I'm an Xbox fan. So.
Okay, gotcha.
I'm still hoping they'll do a VR solution.
Yeah.
Growing up, I was Nintendo. And then I kind of followed Square over to Sony for the PlayStation years. And then when the Xbox came out, something with the 360, something just clicked. And I've been an Xbox guy since the 360. I own everything. Yeah. So I'm not like against any certain companies. I just have preferences.
Totally. Do you have your friends on Xbox?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of a big deal too. It's like where are the people who are playing? But nowadays with so much crossplay, I mean, what a great invention for the industry, right?
Oh, I wish it would be standard. There's so many games that I like. I'm a big Rock Band player, and I have my Rock Band library on Xbox. But I have a bunch of Rock Band friends on PlayStation, and I would love to play with them.
Yeah, totally.
I would love to see that happen.
I think it's possible. I think So Bungie, they developed their own engine. They've got their own proprietary engine technology that's built on the Halo engine. And I think like sometimes companies do that still, right? Like they still will make their own engines. But you know, they were able to implement crossplay. I guess the more people that implement it, and then the more popular engines like Unreal and Unity become, like at this point, crossplay is kind of like built into the engine, which is pretty cool. That's one of the nice things about Fortnite. that people don't give it credit for is it's like a test bed for Epic. Like they build a lot of features into Fortnite, and then a lot of those features then sort of get extreme testing, because like to ship in Fortnite, you know, it's got to be tight. It's got to be completely solid.
Because there's 50 million people playing it, and they can all break it.
And it's like, you know, in a big multiplayer, you know, battle royale setting. So as far as like shipping mechanics and an engine goes, like Epic has a great way of doing that with Fortnite. And then all of that tech, then it's dispersed out to all of the Unreal developers. Not always, because like once you start working on your project, you kind of get stuck in that version of the engine, and then like updating the engine can be kind of expensive. But for the most part, you're getting all of these great tools and these great content features and stuff like that. And so the more we use these big engines, the more commonplace things like that will be, where it's like, oh, that's just a feature that's not in the engine. I mean, it still takes time and money to build it. It's not like it's free.
No.
But my hope is that, yeah, like all of these improvements are just going to like kind of lift the whole industry up, hopefully.
Hopefully. I kind of worry about Sony dragging their feet on the whole crossplay thing. It seems like last generation they were really about it. This generation they're more tentative, but I guess it comes down to who's winning and who's losing and who wants to make the moves and who doesn't. But just as a consumer, I just want to play my goddamn games.
I know. Yeah, I think there's something to be said for taking the consumer side. So hopefully we'll see more of that happening. But it's really interesting to see I feel like Microsoft's strategy has changed quite a bit, right? Like they, you know, had such a big hit with the 360. Xbox One was, you know, really successful. But the PS4
just blew up.
It blew up. PS5 is blowing up.
Yep.
And then Xbox, they're going more with the Game Pass and like the, you know, allowing Xbox games to be played on PC, just kind of like, hey, like integrating it more with Windows, like just doing their Microsoft thing. It's interesting. I'm interested to see where it's going to play out.
I like seeing the three companies focus on their own stuff instead of trying to beat each other.
It's like
Nintendo's focusing on the Switch, and they're focusing on their first party games and portability. Sony is focusing on their first party narrative games. Microsoft is focusing on Game Pass. They're all doing their own separate thing, and they're building themselves up, and it just seems to be a lot better than when they're at each other's throats.
Right. Yeah.
Gaming is better when people get along.
Yeah, totally. I'm over the flame war years. I'm over the fanboy console wars. We had our time. We had our glorious. We had our war. we got our medals.
Nintendo and Sega. We had our war back in the day. We don't need more wars.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I'll
get along and play games together.
Yep. Yep.
I remember the old days when you could buy an attachment for your Atari to play ColecoVision games on it.
Wow. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Crazy stuff back then. Crazy stuff. Imagine if they made an attachment that you could plug in to your PlayStation to play Xbox game.
Wow.
That's what it was like back then. You could just do that.
That kind of breaks my brain. I can't even imagine that. It's pretty funny.
Oh, man. So what are you playing these days? What are you enjoying?
Oh, gosh. I'm kind of a weird gamer. I play really niche strategy games or RTS games, and I get really, really into them for like months at a time. And right now I'm playing Supreme Commander. Do you remember that game?
No, I don't.
Oh, it's a good one. It came out in, I want to say, like 2010, and it was made by Gas Powered Games. And Chris Taylor was the lead designer on it. I never met Chris Taylor, but he was one of those guys who always put his name on the game. Chris Taylor's, he did Total Annihilation. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah.
It's a RTS, like one of the first RTS games, like back in the day. I really like it because it has a big scale. You can zoom all the way out and see the whole map. And sometimes you'll have like thousands of units on screen at once.
Oh, wow.
Nothing's been done quite like it. It's kind of funny though. The original developers are working on Planetary Annihilation, which is it's a really impressive game. It's like a strategy game, like a top-down strategy game, but instead of like a 2D grid map, you're playing on actual planets that are orbiting. And so you'll like zoom in and you'll build on a planet, and then you can like, you know, build rocket ships and stuff and then colonize more planets and stuff. So that one was, I didn't get into that. Not sure why I'm playing the old game, but anyways, there's a community mod that was built for it, and it's just a great client. It's called Forge Alliance Forever. And, you just go to, faforever.org if you're interested. And it's free. I mean, you still got to buy Supreme Commander, but, yeah, I'm just like really into playing these like older strategy games. Which makes it hard to talk about with people because nobody does that.
Hey, I'm like I said, I'm into Rock Band, and a lot of people don't play that anymore. So
yeah. So what do you play all of the different instruments, or
I focus on bass. I messed up my ring finger on my left hand like 8 years ago, and I just don't have the dexterity that I used to have for.
Oh, what a bummer.
Yeah, so I switched from guitar to bass, and I just chill and play bass.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a relaxation thing. I'm not super competitive with scores. I just like to, you know, play some songs, maybe jump online, play with some friends, and it's just relaxation for me.
That's perfect. I love that. I feel like that's you're living the dream, right? That's the 2021. Games are supposed to be.
Relax and chill.
Totally. Yeah, I was just at a wedding and I saw some college friends and they all play Warzone together, and they have like a text thread and they'll just like shoot a text like, yo, I'm dropping, and people will hop on, and that's how they stay in touch. That's how they like continue to grow their friendship, is by playing Warzone together. And there's a little bit of a time zone difference, so I haven't been able to drop with them, but it's cool. It's a great way to, you know, be social and have some time and just have fun.
It makes me wish I was good at multiplayer games like Halo or Call of Duty. I'm terrible at first person shooters. I am god awful at those games. So I struggle. Like, I think my KD ratio in Halo is like a 0.4.
That's still pretty good.
No, it's not.
0.4 is actually pretty.
0.4? Not 4.0.
I'd play with you. I'd play with you.
That's a mistake. That is a huge mistake.
as long as we have someone to carry us, we can just like throw grenades and like carry ammo.
When I play Halo, I always do big team battle. That way I'm not dragging them down too much.
Yeah, I love the big games because you can kind of just like, there's no pressure. You can like just go off and like,
if I suck, there's 15 other people carrying me.
Exactly.
Where in a normal game, it's just me and three other people, and then I'm just like shitting up the whole thing.
Yeah. Yep. And you're getting 12-year-olds yelling at you,
saying things about my mom.
Exactly. Yeah.
My poor mother. Classic She's experience. Been through so much on Xbox Live.
Yeah, everybody's mom has been through it. It's, yeah.
Oh, my Lord. I should probably go back to Moss a little bit. Something I loved about the original Moss, one of my favorite things was just sitting there, standing up and looking around and just enjoying the scenery. It was, tell me I can do more of that in the sequel.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you're going to have a lot more opportunity to do that. We've built a lot more varied environments than what was in the first game. So we've got a snowy environment, you know, we're going, you know, deep into caverns underground, and you're actually going to be going into sort of the enemy home base. And so you'll be infiltrating a arcane facility, And so that will be totally new and different with its own sounds and its own vibe and look. And so there would be plenty of opportunity to just take your time and soak in the scenes and
find secrets.
We hope that
plenty of secrets.
Secrets, like plenty of collectibles, plenty nice. Of things that, you know, collectibles you'll see, and then others you'll actually have to like kind of move around a little bit. That is definitely something we try to encourage, is like, you know, like shifting your head a little bit to the left can actually be, you know, a really important thing, right? Because like you might see a collectible that you didn't notice before, and then the level is, you know, bigger, and now you can, you know, go, oh, how do I get there? And so you're observing the level a little bit more carefully. Like little things like that, like just very simple things like, oh, if the player leans to the right, they get a different view of the space, and it leads them to start asking questions. That kind of stuff is really fun. There's a lot of fun discovery that can happen in Moss, which I'm really excited for players to get into. And when we get a lot of feedback about the game, and one thing that has always surprised me is how many kind of older gamers, people who aren't traditionally gamers, but who maybe got a headset from a family member, or you know, was visiting someone and had a chance to try it and got one for themselves. But there's definitely a type of gamer who is a much slower paced, like more methodical, like just wants to experience the world and, you know, listen to the music and really just kind of look at things, right, and enjoy their time in the space. And so that is absolutely a player type that we want to cater to and make sure that they have a fun time.
Speaking of the music, first game soundtrack is available, correct?
That's correct. Absolutely.
Tell us about it.
Yeah. So I believe Jason was who we worked with the music. He isn't a Polyarcher, but he's a very good close colleague and friend with Steven and Kristen, who are our audio directors. And so we're getting Jason back, and there's going to be a totally new score. And it's going to be even, you know, even better than the first game, because we're going to have more variety. There's going to be music that will, you know, reflect the different places that you're in. We've got boss fights, and there's going to be boss music. It's amazing how much more intense the music in a boss fight makes things. Like, seeing that coming in has been super exciting. It's like, wow, it's actually, it feels like a real game when you actually have music and sound in there. And so, yeah, we've been working with Jason, and he's awesome. I mean, the music is so good, right? Like, I can just turn it on and work to it and just get in the Moss world and love it every second of it. So, yeah.
I'm eager to hear what he whips up for the next game. You mentioned collectibles before. I'm a fan of real life collectibles, and I want to know, when are we going to get a Quill plushie?
Quill plushie, good question.
I'm pretty sure I asked this on the first interview too, a couple years ago. I want a Quill plushie.
Yeah, you want like a big Quill plushie? Is that like a cuddle?
even yeah, a small one would be cool. Just something cute to put on my shelf.
Did you happen to snag one of the original Quill figurines?
No, I didn't. I didn't know there were figurines. I missed out. Son of a bee.
There was, they made Quill figures for the first game that they, I think it was kind of part of like an E3 promotion event. And they actually, they handed them out at some of the shows. And I remember they had to stop doing it, because what they were doing was they'd take a figurine and they'd hide it somewhere at the Staples Center for E3, and then they would take a picture and tweet it, and it was causing stampedes of people.
Oh, so no.
They got told that they couldn't do it, but it was it's a pretty rare figure, but we'd love to make a plushie, and we'd love to make more collectibles, so...
I'm eyeing up the mug on the website, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a good mug. Can't speak to it personally.
I don't drink much coffee, but I could always pour some Mountain Dew in there and drink and sip.
Gamer fuel.
Hey, that's what I'm drinking right now. Game fuel.
Heck yeah.
Courageous Sherbert game fuel.
Sounds good.
It's delicious.
I'm just drinking black coffee. It's kind of...
That's not Mountain Dew.
Not very exciting.
Oh, man. I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
Nothing in particular. I definitely, just when we were chatting about consoles, I just couldn't help but like kind of get all nostalgic about the glory days of of the Sony PS1 and the Genesis, and I'm kind of curious. Yeah, like what's been your gaming story? Like what caused you to fall in love with games, and if there's a game that just blew your mind, what was it?
Well, I first started playing on Atari and ColecoVision with my dad. He had, you know, a handful of games. The one I remember the most is Venture. Not sure if you're familiar with that game. You were like a green or you were like an orange smiley face that went around into different little mazes to collect treasures, and then you had to get out before the green skull dudes would come at you.
Ooh. That sounds cool.
Yeah, I love that game. That was my shit when I was a kid.
Oh man, look at that cover art too. I'm just looking it up now. That's pretty awesome.
With the snake?
Yes. Buddy. And like the hand drawn enemies on the front. So yeah. Cool.
I miss those days. I remember winning $2 off my dad in a bet because he bet me I could never beat the game, which was 3 worlds. Okay. And then he bet me I couldn't beat him when we were playing. And wow. Not only did I beat him, but I beat the 3 worlds and looped back to the beginning and actually yes. Went through a second time.
Let's go.
So $2 right there. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez, I was rich as a kid.
Really, he was punching out of his weight class there, I think.
Think of all the candy cigarettes you could buy with $2 back then in the 80s.
Right.
Swedish yeah, fish man. Out the ass.
Yeah, you've got like a carton of those candy cigarettes.
Oh, my God. The chalky ones or the bubblegum ones? Which ones did you like? The bubblegum ones, if you blew on them, the powder would come out and look like smoke. Those
okay,
cool.
I don't think I ever had those.
No, never?
No.
It was like little tubes of bubble gum with white powder inside, and if you would blow on it, it would come out like smoke.
That's
and
so
you looked
funny.
So cool as a kid blowing on yeah. your candy gum cigarette.
Can you imagine?
The 80s like were such a weird time, man.
yeah, things were wild.
80s and 90s, shit was crazy.
Kids smoking candy gum.
Ugh. You grew up on the streets, man. It was a hard life.
yeah.
What's your gaming story? Where did you start?
So you're gonna notice a trend here. When I was really young, I was aware of games. I was aware of like Nintendo. My parents had NES, and they would play. And I was like 2 or 3, and I would just sit and watch. Like I just loved watching them play Super Mario and Zelda. I don't think I ever really played. I remember playing Top Gun, but not understanding it. Like, they had like the missiles that would come at you and stuff. I remember really liking the music, but I was too young to really ever appreciate it. The first game that really blew my mind was when I was at friend of the family's. We were over for dinner, and they had a couple young sons who are a couple years older than me, and they're like, hey, like we got this new game, we're gonna go play it, do you want to come watch? And it was Command and Conquer, and I'd never seen it before, and I love playing with little army men, and I love playing with little tanks. I had tons of little toys like that, and so seeing that like and seeing them animating on the screen and seeing that you could like harvest Tiberium and build them just like captivated my attention, and I knew from that point on like I was obsessed.
You were a gamer from that moment.
I was a gamer, yeah. And I was too nervous to try because he's like, do you want to try it? It looks like you like it. And I was so scared that I was going to screw up. So I was like, no, you just play. You play. So I just watched him play. And then I think it was maybe a couple years after that, my dad finally got me a PlayStation.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. We saw like the whole... we saw the internet. We were gamers before there was online gaming. Like we got to witness a pretty crazy time in human history, right?
We did. We grew up at a crazy point, and people don't remember the early days of online gaming when you had to use a phone line.
Dude.
You had to dial into something. You couldn't talk to your friends because if you picked up the phone, it just sounded like...
Right. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
Those were the days.
Like writing down codes and saves.
Passwords. Yeah.
Passwords. Yep.
So what's your all-time favorite game? Besides Moss, obviously.
Yeah, besides Moss, of course. Metal Gear Solid for PS1 blew my mind. Like, that game forever is going to be a favorite for me. I think Command & Conquer Red Alert. That one is definitely an all-time favorite. Let me pick something that's a little less standard. It's a little less basic. So I had a Sega Genesis. I really enjoyed Vector Man and Mortal Kombat. And then I got an N64 and really enjoyed Super Mario 64. Of course, that game was awesome.
Legendary game.
Yeah. And then I played a lot of Extreme G. Do you play racing games?
I'm more of like the Forza guy, Forza Horizon.
Nice.
Never really played Extreme G or like F-Zero, the really high speed stuff I could never get into. Because of motion sickness I would run into.
I see. Yeah. I would play Extreme G, and I think like I was maybe 11, so I had like superhuman hand-eye coordination. So I got pretty good at that, and I was able to play like the fastest tracks, which was all muscle memory at that point. You just remember what turn you have to do. That was a favorite as well. Nice. Then like recently, let's see, what have I played recently that's been really good? I just really have been playing Supreme Commander. The favorite for sure.
You're a Command & Conquer fan. Have you heard Frank Klepacki working with the Tiberian Sons?
Of course.
You like that stuff?
Yes. Nice. I'm such a nerd. I watched one of their concerts, and I think I like teared up a little bit. It was like so beautiful. The Tiberian Sons are awesome. Frank is the man. Like, he's one of the coolest dudes ever in video games.
Tony from the Tiberian Sons is a good dude. He did one of our theme songs.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. He's good peoples.
Hell yeah.
I'll have to play some Tiberian Sons on this episode to celebrate you being on.
Oh, yes, please. That's epic. I love it. I still watch.
Any particular song you want to hear?
Let's see.
Play it just for you. I'll get the song and play it.
I think we got to go with Hellmarch. Is that too? Works is that me. Too? Man and Conquery?
No, it works for me.
Is that gonna get you? what is it? You don't get demonetized on podcasts. Nah. That's good.
I'm not worried about it. I don't give a shit.
Hell yeah!
I've been doing this for 8 years. If they want to come after me, let them come after me. I don't care.
Hell yeah!
I'll fight them all. Fist fight them all. I'll take them all on.
The capital G gamer way.
I am being harassed by one of my cats right now. I am told that you have a cat.
I do. I have a cat, Peanut. He's my
Tell me
buddy.
About Peanut.
He is 10 years old. He's a giant tabby cat, and he is afraid of everything. He's the biggest scaredy cat. He's a sweetie, though. He's afraid of thunder, and he's associated rain with thunder and living in Seattle.
No,
we get a lot of rain. But he's a sweetie. How many cats do you have?
13.
Whoa.
Yeah, 13 cats.
That's awesome. So have you seen that house that those people made that have like the catwalks and everything in it?
I've seen some. I'm not sure if I saw the ones you're talking about, but there's some crazy cat people out there, and my wife and I, we're two of them. So
that's so cool. I should have got a second cat.
There's still time.
There's still time, indeed. Right. Right. So what's your cat story? How did you get so many cats?
I started off not having any pets at all. And then a girlfriend moved in with me, and she had two cats.
Mm-hmm.
And they made two more cats.
Okay.
And then she left me, and I kept two of the four.
Okay.
And then over time, one was hit by a car and we lost him. The other we had to give away because he was spraying. So we were back to zero.
Mm-hmm.
And then my girlfriend at the time, she surprised me by bringing a cat home the one day.
Uh-huh.
Then it just kind of like snowballed from there.
Yeah. I totally understand.
She got the one, the first one she got at a Wendy's drive thru.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She was working at Wendy's and someone pulled up, placed an order, went to the window. They had a box of kittens and my now wife, she kept one.
Wow.
That was the first one.
That's a rare adoption.
Yeah. The Wendy's adoption.
Yeah.
Then she surprised me with a second one while I was just sleeping. I woke up with a kitten on me.
Uh-huh.
The third one was a stray by my mom's house that was shot by a paintball gun.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So we ended up taking her to the vet, her taken care of, treated her for ticks and fleas and everything else. Ended up keeping her. Number four was Coltrane. Love mm-hmm. her. She's sitting next to me right now. That's the only one we got from a pet store. It sounds mm-hmm. cliche, but it was one of those like love at first sight things
mm-hmm.
where I saw the cat and it was just like, oh, I need to have that cat.
Yeah.
And the cat just like perked up to me and it was just a connection. And that's why she's sitting next to me right now.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know.
Yeah. And then we lost our first one, unfortunately, liver disease.
Oh, sorry.
Or no, kidney failure. Bad. And then, God, I'm starting to get lost of how many we had. We got 13. Punk from an outdoor barn, and then Potato followed my wife home from work, and then we were good. We were at five, and we were good. We were happy, damn it.
Right.
We were fine with five. And five then my mom had kittens.
Oh, no.
And we wanted one of them, and my mom wanted one of them. One of my wife's coworkers wanted one of them, and we ended up with all three.
Everybody fell through.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably
so now
because they knew that you were gonna that you could pick up the slack.
Yeah. So we went from five to eight in one jump.
Wow.
And then we moved and came to where we are now. So we have a nice big house, lots of room, plenty of room for the cats to run around. We went to my niece's birthday party. And when we were leaving, there was a stray cat just came right up to us, started following us around. And we were like, all right, I guess we're keeping this one so it doesn't get hit by a car or anything. That was nine. That was Pickle.
Aw, Pickle.
And then we had an outdoor cat who gave birth and decided to leave the kittens on our porch.
Oh, what? And just left?
No, Mama and the kittens just stayed on our porch.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And the dad disappeared and we were worried about the kittens getting run over or anything. So we were like, well, I guess Mama and the kittens are coming in. So we had Mama, Peanut, Butter, and Jelly.
Oh, you got a Peanut too.
Yep. Full spelled out though, not P-Nut.
Yeah. We're P-Nut.
Yeah.
Which is, the drummer from 311. Is who he's named after.
Oh my, I love it. That's beautiful. Beautiful disaster. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Little fur babies after our hearts.
Yeah, that's how I got my 13.
That's impressive. You got that like cat vibe. Cats just know that you'll help them.
Yeah, we love our babies.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
Oh man. Well, I know we've been chatting for a good while now. I don't want to keep you all day, so I will let you get going. It has been an awesome chat having you on.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't even get to ask about your mustache. I was told you had a good one.
It's been about a year since I've been growing it, and it's not bad. I don't hate it, and I think I might keep it.
You'll have to send us a picture.
Okay, sounds good.
So we could use it for the episode. It'll just be a picture of you with the mustache.
I'll try to get Peanut in there, too.
Yes! Yes, do it. Do it, okay. do it. Yeah, cool. It's been awesome having you on chatting. Everyone else, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back with more show after a little bit of a break. Listen to some music. Cooley, one more time. Give us all the details about Moss. Where can people keep up to date with you guys, with what you're doing, everything else? Give us all the info.
For sure. Yeah. You can follow us on Twitter at Polyart Games. We've got a YouTube channel as well, Polyart Games. You can go see our announcement trailer there. Moss Book 2 is in the works. It's going to be coming out before too long. We don't have an announcement date yet, but definitely be on the lookout for that coming soon.
Next year sometime,
yeah. Cool. And we are just so stoked to be on the show and to talk about the game. So thank you for giving us this opportunity.
And it was a pleasure having you on. Please come back.
Thank you to your fans. Oh, totally. We'd love to. Yeah, it's been a pleasure to chat. And I mean, I could talk about this stuff all day. So
so can I. So that's why we have to wrap it up, because I could just go on forever. But
I understand.
Yeah, it's been awesome having you on. We're going to take a quick break, be back with more show. Do you have any final words to end it?
Just thanks for playing the game. Thanks for being fans of Moss and fans of Quill. We can't wait to show you what we've been working on next.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another thanks to Cooley Callahan at PolyArk for coming on and chatting about Moss 2. Don't know when it's coming out, but I can't wait for it. It looks great. And Moss 1 was awesome. So fucking bring it on. News, reviews, we got shit to take care of. Jacob's here. Jacob, how are you doing?
I'm here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just finished a quick race and a game, and so now, like, I quickly got upstairs, so
you're out of breath as you took the steps.
I am fat, yeah. So
I know the feeling. I'm there too.
Yeah, it's okay.
I sit down too hard and I'm winded.
What?
So, a lot of news. We should just dive right into this. Games with Gold and PlayStation Plus for October were both announced, and they sure are lineups.
Oh, okay. Sorry, like it cut out for a second. So it's like, you know, the lineups were, you know. So I was like, I don't know what word you just said. So, but then I figure you said announced.
Yeah, so. I don't know why your phone cut out.
It, whatever.
Well, no, I don't know what happened.
I don't know.
It's your shit, okay. Motherfucker.
Anyway, they were announced, and if I didn't own everything for the Xbox Games with Gold, it would be an awesome lineup. And I was so happy, like, when I saw it. And I was just like, oh, these are great games for everybody, and I don't own one. And then I went into my Game Sigs. I was like, oh, I bought that one. Okay, so. I don't get any free games this month or next month, but I'm okay with that. Anyways, you should probably talk about what games they actually are, though.
Yeah, on Xbox One, we're getting Arrow and Hover.
Arrow is freaking awesome. I love the soundtrack. Monster Cat did a lot of, or is the label that handled a lot of the music for it. And just so you folks know, if you like the soundtrack on Arrow, on iTunes.
Fucking yeah!
At least, like, once, like, I don't know, I'd say, like, once every 6 weeks they do a sale on, like, EDM music. There's always a shitload of Monster Cat albums for sale for, like, $5. And if you buy, like, the Best of Monster Cat album, like, you essentially have the soundtrack to Arrow, and you can usually get it for $5 during the sale, even though it's not advertised as part of said sale. So,
you know what else you could get for $5? A sub to the SML podcast. Just like Root Beer is my jam, subbed for the 28th month. Thank you, Root Beer. Always good seeing you in chat. Yes, now we're all thirsty for Root Beer. But I only have Mountain Dew Thrashed Apple right now.
I have unsweetened iced tea.
Hey, you bitch.
What? I don't like sweet tea.
Sweet anyway. Tea? You don't want sweet tea?
Nah, I don't want my sweet tea.
You don't want sweet tea?
Anyway. The other one, Hover, I actually reviewed that one a while back. If you miss Jet Set Radio and that kind of genre, it's like that, except kind of like more. It's kind of like Jet Set Radio and Mirror's Edge had a baby. Like it's pretty good. I enjoyed it then. I recommend it now, especially that now that it's going to be free.
Yeah, so. Free is always a good price tag. And then on the Xbox 360, you're getting Castlevania Harmony of Despair.
That's the one I didn't think I owned, but it turns out I do.
Yeah, this is an interesting choice. I wonder if this is going to, like, boost the player count online, because it's an online game.
Oh, really?
I mean, you can single player it, but it's meant to be played with friends.
Shit, I didn't know that. So I spent money on a... Okay. Damn it.
Oh, it's a fucking blast, though. Castlevania Harmony of Despair, Aki. It's basically like slices of Castlevania, because she asked in chat.
Oh, okay. All right, gotcha. Yeah.
I was paying attention to chat, too.
Gotcha. I was like, I'm not Aki.
You should probably open up Twitch and pay attention to chat for how often they make fun of you.
You should look at these nuts.
And then the other game is Resident Evil Code Veronica X.
Which is the game that I bought a code off of you like 8 years ago for that game and then never fucking played it. So that was the one I was just like, you know, good thing I bought this game. Like, it's a good story.
Yeah, great story. PlayStation Plus. their lineup is weird. For PS5, you're getting Hell Let Loose, which a lot of people are like, why? It's a like 50 versus 50 online multiplayer game.
Okay.
And I have so little interest in this one, but can't satisfy everyone with every game, right? PS4, PGA 2K21. That's a good one.
Yeah.
I like the PGA games. On that one. And then this is the questionable one, Mortal Kombat X.
What?
Not Mortal Kombat XL with the DLC, and not Mortal Kombat 11. They're going with the old one with no DLC that's already part of the PlayStation Plus collection on PS5.
That's
people are pissed about that one.
Weird.
Yeah. Good shit. Let's see. Some Game Pass news. We got a couple of games on Game Pass this week. The Avengers came.
Which I'm... Honestly, I'm excited about that. Because now I get to try it. Because I was like, yeah, I'm not buying this thing. So.
That's a smart idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that we could get the fucking Avengers, but we can't get, like, ActRaiser released on Xbox. Like, what the fuck, Square? Why? Square and Microsoft need to, like, figure out what the fuck they're doing. Are they friends? Are they not friends? Is it only, like, the Western games that they give a shit about? What the hell is that?
I loaded up Twitch like you told me to, and it started automatically playing some dude's stream.
Oh, nice. So,
yeah.
Cool. Also joining Game Pass this week, we got Scarlet Nexus.
Which is fucking cool. I'm a little surprised, because that just launched, like 2 months ago?
It was further than that.
Three? Like, something.
I don't remember. And then AI the Somnium Files from Spike Chunsoft.
I'm not familiar with that.
Like a detective mystery RPG kind of thing.
Thang.
Yeah.
Okay.
Aki's saying, I want to play Scarlet Nexus. Well, it's now on Game Pass, so you can.
Woo!
Yay! Also, Xbox Cloud Gaming launched in Australia, Brazil, Mexico, and Japan.
Wait, what?
Cloud Gaming. Xbox Cloud Gaming.
Oh, okay. All right, that's cool.
Yeah. Some Sony news. Sony has acquired Bluepoint Games.
What did they do?
They are the ones who did, like, the Nathan Drake collection, the Shadow of the Colossus remake, the Demon's Souls remake.
Okay, so essentially they've just been...
They've done basically a lot of remakes and ports.
Yeah.
But they've been done phenomenally. Like, Bluepoint doesn't fuck around with their games. Their work is fantastic. And they apparently are working on an original game now. Now they're partnered with Sony.
Okay. Maybe Sony gave them the money to make that thing possible.
Yeah. And then rumors are that Lucid, the developers behind Destruction All-Stars, are handling a Twisted Metal revival.
Okay. So that was rumored because I think they said a TV show is supposed to be happening.
Probably.
I think that's what it was tied to.
Maybe.
And the rumor was that with the show, there was supposed to be a game coming out around the same time as well.
I know the original developer of Twisted Metal is not pleased that he wasn't contacted about it.
Whoops.
Oh, well, Sony's going to Sony. The Initiative is teaming up with Crystal Dynamics to develop the new Perfect Dark game.
I was never really a fan of Perfect Dark. I mean that's cool, because I know for some people that game is the actual gold standard for Nintendo 64 first person shooters for some people. No. But it was never really my bag. I'm not a fan of stealth.
Eh. Oh well. Are you a fan of RPGs?
Sometimes.
Because you have to Disco Elysium is finally hitting the Xbox on October 12th.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty fucking exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited about that one, too. I've heard so much about it. I've kind of kept ignorant about the game because I've heard so much good about it. I want to go in fresh and clean and not have my opinion tainted by previews or footage I've seen out of context. I just want to go in fresh and see what it's all about.
Yeah, one of my coworkers was playing the shit out of that last summer. So, I'll definitely give that a chance.
Herpier says that's a great fucking game. Yeah, that's what I hear. So, let's see. Physical editions for Disco Elysium are going to be arriving on November 9th. So, if you are interested in a hard copy, just got to wait a few more months.
Okay.
Nintendo has officially stated on Twitter that there are no tools being supplied for a 4K Switch and that the existence and rumors of said console are false.
I mean, I've only heard some word about this, but people were saying like 11 different studios have these kits or whatever it is. Where did all this even come from?
I don't know, but Nintendo is coming out and outright stating that those kits do not exist. Whatever rumors there are false. A 4K Switch does not exist. And they're saying, like, we're clarifying this for our stockholders. Like, this shit doesn't exist.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
I was actually about to ask your opinion on whether you thought that they were just bluffing, but then once you said our stockholders, I was like, never mind. Nintendo's not bluffing.
Yeah. Some sad news. Super Cloud Built was delisted from console storefronts this week.
Super what?
Cloud Built.
I've never even heard of that.
Yeah. Well, too late for you now.
what the heck was it?
I forget what the game was. Dude, we've covered so many games on this show. I can't remember all
Super
of them.
Super Cloud
Built. Oh,
Cloud Built is one word.
Okay. Super Cloud Built looked good, but it was too hard to beat, says Aki. I believe there was like some kind of issue with the publisher, so it was pulled from sale.
Double
a third person puzzle platformer shooter game.
Okay.
There you go.
Wonder if there's any I wonder if this is going to have to be like my Stranger Things 3 game. Quick, get a code.
Oh gee. Anyway, last bit of news I have is the Life is Strange Remastered Collection will be coming on February 1st.
Hold on, I just to interrupt on that last thing about Super Cloud Built. If you seriously need a code for it, Newegg has it for 20.
Mm.
I may screw on that. Yeah.
Yeah. What news do you have?
My first bit of news that I'm super excited about. If you go up on our, the Facebook page, I posted a steelbook cover for the 1994 classic video game movie Street Fighter, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme, co-starring a mountain of cocaine to get it done, and Raul Julia, in which it is truly his finest performance as M. Bison. Mill Creek Entertainment is going to be releasing it in early December. And so not only do you get amazing cover art, I actually don't know anything about the extras, but what's really cool about it is that you get one Bison dollar that's included with it. So I'm just like, hell yeah, dude. I was already sold on the cover art, like, enough that I'm just like, yo, I'm going to fucking
double dip on this shit. Yeah, pointing out, let's not forget Kylie Minogue. Can't forget her.
Yeah, but I mean, like, she
looked great in that movie.
I mean, she did, and she was dating Jean-Claude Van Damme at the time.
Oh, was she?
Yeah, I think it was Vice had an article about it, like an oral history of Street Fighter, and yeah, it was confirmed that the two, they were either dating or they were just banging at the time, but like...
Hey, win-win.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. Cammy, like, didn't really do anything for me in the movie, but yeah, my favorite is Wes Studi as Sagat, you know, you know, it's 1994. You think we're going to be progressive enough. Sagat is from Thailand, right? I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wes Studi is Native American. And it's just like, you know, you thought, like, you know, it's been 50 years since, like, you know, the West, like, the, since Hollywood was doing Westerns with, like, all right, yeah, we're going to cast Italians and, you know, Spanish people as Native Americans in movies because, you know, you're brown enough, quote unquote, you know, oh, and it's just like 1994, we've got Wes Studi playing a Thai, you know, guy, and it's just, but at the same time, it's Wes Studi, so he's awesome as hell. If you have, if you're not familiar with him, go watch Last of the Mohicans. He's awesome as fuck. Anyway,
so what other news?
Yeah, before I start talking like
so yeah, talking about fucking movies. Street Fighter for 20 minutes.
Shut up! It's a great movie.
No,
it's so bad it's good. But anyway, shut up. All right, so. I don't know why I'm telling you to shut up when I'm the one that needs to shut up. Anyway, so The Witcher has been already is renewed for season 3 on Netflix, and we're also apparently getting a spin-off for kids.
What?
I don't. Yeah, they've announced that there's going to be multiple spin-offs, and one of them is going to be aimed at kids. They gave it they actually gave it a title. I thought. Yeah, I don't know what it is, but
Witcher show for kids.
Yeah, there's going to be an anime prequel called Nightmare of the Wolf, and there's also going to be another prequel called Witcher Blood Origin, but I don't think they actually, maybe they didn't give the kids one a name yet, but we're getting a kid-focused one, like, I don't know. I mean, hell, we grew up with, like, a Rambo and a RoboCop cartoon show when we were kids, so...
True.
Why not?
True.
There is a new malware that's going around that is stealing people's Steam, Epic Game Store, and EA Origins accounts. And
yay!
Yay! And on top of it, you can purchase access to this malware and grab other people's accounts for a monthly fee, or you can sign up for a lifetime, subscription to this malware for like $40. Period. Dot.
Why are you bringing this up?
Because it was in the news?
Like, do you have a sponsorship with them that you're saying that you can buy it?
No. Hey, Joe, let me load something on your computer.
Yeah, okay.
That
would require you to visit, and that's not happening anytime soon.
All right, so... Marvel has gone ahead and has actually been talking about the upcoming Spider-Man 2 game from Insomniac, saying it's going to be a darker game than the previous one, and they liken it more to, like, Empire Strikes Back.
Hmm.
So, apparently, Spider-Man's going to eat shit in that game. NBA 2K Esports is expanding to Mexico, in case you care about...
No.
We
don't have to cover, like, literally all the news.
Shut up. All right. I thought, the thing is that I thought it was kind of interesting because I don't really cover that much esports news because I'll be honest, I don't really get the point of esports. But the thing is that it's esports of a real sport. And, like, the thing that's being added from Mexico. Apparently this, I don't know if it's a league or if it's a team, like the article from ESPN wasn't really too clear, but apparently it's worth $25 million. And I'm like, what? This is people sitting around and playing NBA 2K. I mean, granted, I thought it was a pretty good game as per my last review, but like, what? That's like a player's salary. Like, I've got two more bits of news. Netflix has bought its first video game studio with the plan to do mobile games. It's called Night School Studio, and it's going to be rolling out 5 mobile titles in select European markets. Night School Studio is the one who made Oxenfree.
I was going to say, I knew that name.
Yeah. And this is going to be, I think it's going to be their first mobile title. These are going to be like their first mobile titles. So the ones are Stranger Things 1984, Stranger Things 3, The Game, Card Blast, Heater Up, and Shooting Hoops on Android. And they came out to Netflix subscribers in Spain and Italy. Hmm. So I'm wondering if Stranger Things 3, The Game, which got delisted, I'm wondering if that's coming back now.
Probably on that service, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, I'm so glad I bought it for $20. But whatever, theoretically, I bought the last Xbox code on the internet, so go me. Anyway, and my final bit of news, which, Joe, I hope you're going to be really receptive to, I think we need to get off Twitch, and we need to start streaming on Chatterbait. So
Chatterbait, I heard about that.
So Chatterbait, which is a live cam site, supposedly, now I've never been on it, so I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, sure.
Because people in my good Christian suburbs would never go to a site like that. Because that is sin upon the Lord.
Get to the point.
So the streaming platform is now supporting certain pre-approved games. Now, most of them are indie sex titles. However, there's a game called Logjammers, which was an axe-throwing game. Apparently, it's some sort of Steam game. I'm not familiar with it at all. But they're now letting models just, you know, play games and earn points that way. So, Joe, here's my idea. You and I start streaming games on Chatterbait. We'll be topless, so then we're showing some boob, and, you know, we'll be naked models. Does that sound good to you?
SML Thursday shows are an e-sport. It's a contest of extreme patience.
That is fair.
Are you ready to get to reviews?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to get to reviews. We have this show has been long. First game to talk about tonight, Hot Wheels Unleashed, developed and published by Milestone, released September 30th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $49.99. Collect the best vehicles in the Hot Wheels universe, build spectacular tracks, and dive into breathtaking races. Jacob, tell us about Hot Wheels Unleashed.
So, I've reviewed a couple of Milestone Italy's games before, and I've sucked at them. Mostly because Milestone is known for making realistic racers, and I think this might actually be their first time that they've ever dabbled in arcade kind. So, I was excited about that, especially when I saw the trailer for it. And pretty much, it is just, like, it is huge Hot Wheels tracks. I mean, but like they're still set in like a normal sized room. But you're just racing around all these different tracks that they've built using, you know, the Hot Wheels track pieces that you see in stores and stuff like that. Loop-de-loops, the spiders, the T-Rexes. Apparently there's a volcano in there too. I haven't gotten that far in the game yet. I'm getting there though. I've got most of the tracks unlocked, but
there's a lot of tracks in this game, too.
Yeah, there's about 40 or so, I think. Because there's multiple different... what's the word I'm looking for?
Like it's locations, not like themes.
Thank you, locations. Yeah, themes. Like, there's a college theme. There is a basement theme, like, you know, like a man cave kind of theme. There's, like, a workshop, a skate park, skyscraper. And so there's all these different themes of like how you want to set stuff up. And honestly, the game just shows a lot of imagination. You're going around the tracks as all these different Hot Wheels cars, and they've pulled them from all over. Most of them are modern, like within like the last 5 years, but they've got classic ones like Twin Mill, which was released, I believe, back in the late 70s, and has consistently been a classic Hot Wheels design that still gets used to this day. And, you know, you pretty much just start your race, you know, you have an option for boost, and you just go, and you race up against, like, 11 other AI bots during a normal race. There's also time trials, which I would hope you all know what time trials are at this point.
Never heard of them. I hate the time trial. I fucking hate time trials in racing games. I'm so tired of them, because I don't want to meet your ridiculous goal to get... Like, if you bump the wall one time and it fucks up your time, and you got to start all over.
That's that's one of my issues with it, and I'll get to that later. So those kind of races are available, and currently that's what's there. There's single player, so you can do a bunch of quick races. There's this thing called, it's not called Hot Wheels City, but it's essentially like a mission mode kind of thing. And it splits it up between regular races and time trials. And going back to the time trial thing, this is what I have an issue with, because if you're not able to get past one of these time trial things, you're pretty much stuck with wherever you're able to go, because it won't let you advance past that thing. And I can tell you right now, like, for adults, that this game won't be that much of an issue to at least get past, like, the second time that you have to get by. But honestly, my kids were playing it, and I could tell you right now, they're never, like my son's 7, he's never gonna get past any of these time trials at this point. So if you've got kids, you're gonna be helping them out on some of this stuff. But at the same time, that mission mode thing also gives you free cars, which is pretty damn nice. And holy crap, there's a lot of cars in this game. 66 at launch. There's a DLC one that you can buy for $1 that just dropped today, along with Volume 1. We weren't given those for review, so we can't really go into them, but just know that there is more content coming for this game.
Yeah, I think Volume 1 is $30. It includes an expansion, 10 cars, some customization shit. I think the value is going to have to come down to how good the expansion is. I don't know how good it's going to be. I don't know how expansive it's going to be. But asking $30, you figure the cars are $1 or $2 each. That's 10 to 20, $15 right there. The expansion is 10 to 15. The price kind of lines up with what they're giving away. I just hope that it's worth it.
And that's what I'm kind of curious too, because the description doesn't tell you anything other than, you know, it's X amount of cars, this amount of customization, this many track things. Like, so I wish that there was more description, or at least maybe there's a trailer up on YouTube. I didn't get a chance to look before this, but anyways, I digress. So, there's a ton of cars to unlock in this game. And you can unlock cars either through, winning races in quick mode, or going through that city, like the mission mode kind of thing. And if you do the mission mode, it also, as you beat tracks, you also unlock them instead of having to actually pay for them. Now, the payment, I'm a little hesitant on, because it either means that you're stuck playing this game a lot, which, first off, isn't a bad thing. Because let me make this clear, I absolutely adore this game. I love it. It plays like a dream. My fear is that this thing could lead to microtransactions. It's not there yet. Like, it's not there in the game, but I could see it happening where it's just like they start offering like X amount of coins.
Buy the coins, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm really hoping that that's not the route that they're trying to, like, that they're aiming to go for in this game. But even then, I played this game way more than Joe knows. If you go up on True Achievements, I'm the first person to get the 100 Quick Races achievement.
No one cares.
Shut up. I care. I played this game a ton. It's an absolute blast on single player. I love it. My kids love it. I didn't get a chance to try out the multiplayer. Did you, Joe?
Yes, like, I did a couple of online races. Okay. I played with Carnage quite a bit. My biggest gripe is that, like, if you get into a race and everybody picks a long race and you do poorly, you spend like 10 minutes on a race and you get like 35 coins. It's like, why? What was the point of wasting that time to get so little? And I think that's my biggest gripe with the game in general, is it just gives you too little coins for what you're doing.
Okay. I actually didn't get a chance to do multiplayer, because every single time that I tried it, granted was late at night, and so I don't know how many people were on, but either the lobby was completely empty, or when I did on those, I think I got into two actual lobbies with other people. both times it just hung. And I don't know, like, I don't know what was up with that, but I didn't get a chance to do multiplayer. Now the final thing with this game is a track builder thing. And holy crap, if you've got lots of time on your hands and you've got plenty of imagination, there is a shitload to do in this. And it is really impressive. It's a lot of fun. It's a tad time consuming because you really have to actually like sit there and plan out your tracks. But the tools with it, you know, it really makes it work. And so if you want to sit there and go through it, and introduce some tracks to, like, you know, your friends and your kids and what all, I'm hoping that there's an upload feature for them, so that you can download like your friends' tracks and stuff like that. But, there's a lot to this, as I said, there's a lot to this game. And holy crap, I really enjoyed it through and through. This was a really solid release. I'm glad Milestone Italy, you know, is dabbling in arcade racers, and I hope to see more titles like this from them in the future. And I'm excited about all the DLC for this game.
Well, then for $50, what's your verdict on Hot Wheels Unleashed?
Abso-friggin-lutely. And I will also say this, this game, because it came in under the wire for quarter three, this is my quarter three contender for game of the year. So, I said it's my contender for quarter three. Each quarter gets their own contender, and then they duke it out at the end of the year. So, shush. Don't give me that look. I can see you.
You're getting the look.
I know I'm getting the look. I can see you in the chat thing.
Anyway. Next game to talk about is Super Monkey Ball Banana Mania, developed by RGG Studio, published by Sega, released October 5th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, Switch, and PC for $39.99. Go bananas with your favorite monkey gang in the ultimate Super Monkey Ball adventure. It's the ultimate Super Monkey Ball adventure. It really is. It is basically Super Monkey Ball 1 and 2 and Deluxe mashed together. So you have tons of courses to go through in this game. If you're familiar with Monkey Ball, you know what to expect in the gameplay. If you've never played Monkey Ball before, imagine a marble on a playing field and you're tilting the playing field. You're not controlling the ball. You're tilting the level, and that's what moves the ball. And you have to get your ball from the beginning to the ending and collect bananas along the way. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's hard. Usually it's hard, usually it pisses you off, usually it frustrates you, you're going to damage a controller, you might break your TV, it happens. I didn't do it, but the internet exists, and stories are fun. But yeah, there's a ton of courses in this game, there's a story mode, they have challenge modes in the game, bunch of worlds, bunch of stages. I can't remember the exact number of stages in this game, let me see if the store page mentions it. More than 300 stages. Jesus.
Holy crap. Christ. That's a lot.
Jesus. I thought it was like 100 or 150. God damn. That is a lot of, that's a lot of stages. I have so much I have to play in this game. Holy crap. The other big thing with Monkey Ball has always been the mini games. And that is where people are going to spend the majority of their time. When you have friends over, because there are 12 different mini games in this one, and pretty much all of them are good. I know they've had some Monkey Ball games where they had like 80 mini games and most of them were garbage, but the ones in this one are solid. They have Monkey Race, which is a standard racing game, Monkey Fight, which is a kind of like a top-down boxing game, Monkey Target, where you fly and have to land on a playing field to collect points. I have an issue with this one because it feels like the ramp, when you hit the bottom of the ramp, I don't know if it's modeled properly or what, but you hit the ramp and bounce off it and you lose all your momentum. I haven't been able to get a good score once on Monkey Target. It just feels like the ramp is modeled wrong. I don't know if that's something they could look into. Monkey Billiards, which is pool, obviously 8 and 9 ball. Monkey Bowling, which is hard as fuck to get used to because the aiming thing goes back and forth so fast. You really have to learn how to master curveballs in Monkey Bowling. Monkey Golf, they have standard golf and mini golf. So a lot of golf in the game. Monkey Boat, which is a rowing game. Monkey Shot, which is like an on rails shooting game with multiple stages. Monkey Dog Fight, Monkey Soccer, Monkey Baseball, Monkey Tennis, which they're all what you would expect them to be. Tennis, baseball. The baseball one is fun because they have like different ramps you could go off that determines what hit you get, like whether it's a single or a home run or whatever else. Plays like an old arcade pinball game, sort of. There's also tons of customization in this game. There are missions that as you progress in the game or you progress in the mini games, accomplish certain feats, basically its own in-game achievement system. You unlock currency that you could use to purchase outfits or accessories or new characters like Sonic and Tails and Beat. The dude from Yakuza.
I was excited when they announced that. It's a silly reason to get excited for this game, but I was just like, oh yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. Got a reason to get this now. this really is like the ultimate monkey ball game. It's just packed with content. It's only $40. And this one I would get behind as an absolute buy if you're a Monkey Ball fan. If you have never played Monkey Ball before, this is absolutely the time to get in and try it because it has everything Monkey Ball that you would want. It has all the good stages. It has all the good mini games, lots of modes, lots of customization, lots of replayability with the mission modes. It's just an absolute solid package and $40, absolute buy it.
Cool.
Yeah. Next up is the Addams Family Mansion Mayhem, developed by PHL Collective, published by Outright Games, released September 24th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $39.99. Family Game Night is about to get terrifyingly exciting. Save the Addams Family Mansion from destruction in this hilarious 3D platform adventure for up to 4 players. Play mini games that will have you bumping and jumping over each other to win. Jacob, tell us about your time with the Addams Family Mansion Mayhem.
I'm not going to lie. I was a little bit wary of this game, mostly because, you know, it's a licensed movie thing and, you know, the movie's coming out soon. And so I just assumed that this, I'll be honest. I kind of had an assumption that this was going to be a rushed game. And so I started playing it and I'm not going to lie. All of the they're not interactive, but, like all the cutscenes, they're just simple dialogue and, you know, the characters, all they do is make noises. Like, there's no spoken dialogue, and I was just like,
No, you have to read.
Well, no, it's not that, but it was just like, I'm just like, they couldn't get the dialogue from the movie, or, like, they couldn't get voice actors on this one. But then I started playing it, and this is actually a really solid platformer. I was really surprised by this. Like, it's very kid friendly. My oldest kid was a big fan of jumping around and, like, you know, trying to figure out how to get past the next area and stuff like that. I was pleasantly surprised with it too. It actually shows a lot of imagination. So pretty much you just have to go through all these different areas of the house, and each one is its own theme for a certain room. And, like the one that I played the most with my son, because he wanted to start up his own safe profile on it, was the dining room area, which is the China, and you have to go through like the China cabinet and stuff like that. And, essentially you're just going over all these tables and plates and boiling cauldrons and stuff like that. And it's standard platform stuff, but how they present everything, like they have floating plates, which, when your character jumps on it, the plate will sink. Which I thought was kind of cool. There's secret areas that you have to get past. There's things that you have to open up, and there's portals, which, like, if you don't go through the right one, then you have to defeat a bunch of enemies and then go through the next one. And hopefully that'll get you where you want to go. And as you go through each, area, you're going to unlock, these different weapons that you can use. And granted, it's all the same. Like, let's not lie. I mean, it is a simple platformer. But as I said, it shows that there was a lot of imagination from the dev team on it, and I really do appreciate that. My only real issue with it is that there are some areas that were very hard to get past, and not not in like a challenging way, but like not in like a when I say challenging, I mean like, oh, there's too many enemies, or like, you know, like the puzzle's too hard to figure out. It's like there are just certain areas where if you don't do certain moves, which the game never tells you that this is what you're going to have to do, then the like it's not intuitive to get past this kind of thing. And I had to discover that if you do a jump and then like use your weapon while you're jumping, it propels you just ever so slightly than just like a normal jump. But as I said, the game doesn't tell you that, and it requires a lot of accuracy that I'm not gonna lie, my oldest didn't really have. And so, you know, he's thinking that the game is broken, and it's taking me multiple tries to figure out what the heck is going on with getting to the next part. And then I have to grab his controller and get his character to the next part. So it could be a little frustrating, but honestly, through and through, this is a solid thing. You know, the platforming areas were fun. The various mini games, which there's a lot, there's a nice variety in this game. To be honest, for a movie license game that's aimed at kids, this really was actually a really solid title. I was really pleasantly surprised with it.
No, $40. What do you think of it?
$40 is, I think it's a little steep. I would have been more okay with 30, but 40, yeah, I'm all right with that. I think you're going to get a lot of game time out of it, a lot of enjoyment with it. As I said, I think there's like little things that need to be done here and there. You know, like making certain things like slightly closer so kids will be able to get to certain areas by themselves. But other than that, yeah,
you needed help, didn't you? Did your wife help you?
No,
she helped you, didn't she?
Maybe
you're bad at video games.
You're just, man, you will never ever drop my horse in me too. Oh my God.
I still want that game. Next game to talk about is Agatha Christie, Hercule Poirot, the first cases.
Hercule Poirot.
Go ahead. You say it.
Poirot.
Okay. Whatever. Poirot.
Yeah.
Poirot. Developed by Blazing Griffin, published by Microids, released October 5th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $29.99. In his early years as a detective, Hercule Poirot.
Oh my God.
Hercules is invited. Is invited to a reception by the influential Vandenbosch family for the announcement of their daughter's engagement, but tensions amongst the guests runs high as a snowstorm descends on the town, trapping everyone inside the manor. The happy event is soon marred by the murder of one of the guests, probably the guy who couldn't pronounce anybody's name, like me. Jacob, tell us about the game.
So, I believe that the developers made another Agatha Christie one, also starring Poirot. I hadn't gotten around to this one or to that one, but when this one was announced, I was plenty excited and, you know, we got it. That being said, so pretty much what you have to do is that you have to go around, the various areas. And of course the game will only allow you to walk around certain areas of the house as are needed, to advance the storyline. So it's not like you have free reign over like the entire mansion. But you have to go around, you have to talk to certain people, and depending on how the conversations go, you know, it could either go really well and they'll divulge more information, or they'll just completely shut down, or even worse, they will super shut down. And then you actually have to repeat the conversation again because you failed so hard that you essentially got like a game over on it, which happened to me once. I'm not going to lie, I was a little surprised by that. I just thought that the game would be like, no, eat shit. But no, it actually made me like redo like the whole entire conversation. It was like, you suck at this, like play to this guy's favor. So as I said, you go around and you have to make all these deductions to figure out, you know, who's done what. And each chapter has various objectives that you have to meet, which of course you meet through making all these deductions. And the deductions are numerous. I think there's like I think total by the end of the game, it's going to be like 150 or more. And they all range to like, oh, well, you know, there's like a stab wound. What else in the room could have done it? All right, well, it might be a knife. It might be. And then like by making a deduction, sometimes you'll have other deductions that you have to make. Like it could be like character motives. It could be like evidence tying them together. But at the same time, some of them are super simple. Like Joe is holding a beer and Joe is drunk. Joe must have drunk a beer. Like,
oh, I wish.
That's your deduction. Like, that's the level of some of these deductions. And
wish I was drunk, enough, it'd be so much easier to put up with you.
I hate you. Anyway. So some of these deductions, like, they just seem so simple, but you don't understand, like, it doesn't, it, like, sometimes it didn't register with me that, like, that's what the game was going for. And it's just, like, so I understood, like, how to get from point A to point C, but I didn't get what, you know, it wanted for point B at some points. And I'm not going to lie, like, some of the deductions that they pulled in this game were completely out of left field, and I wish I had written down what they were. Because it's just like they didn't make sense to me.
You don't make sense.
No, be quiet. It's just like Jacob is holding a fly swatter. It's cold outside. Like,
I mean, clearly, you know? that totally makes sense.
And then the deduction is he must own a Xerox printer. Like it's like that. Like it felt like that level of stuff. And it's just like I ended up having, like, thankfully other people were reviewing this thing and they were posting guides, because early on I ended up having to consult a guide a few times just because I wasn't sure where the heck the game was going with some of these deductions. And so it's a tough game. It's interesting. And I really want to see this game through. So I'm having fun with it, even though I'm not quite getting where it's always going.
Yeah.
But it's got a good storyline to it. The graphics aren't exactly the prettiest. I feel like this is a PC game that they probably ported over to consoles, or like it was originally planned as a PC game and then they ported it over. But it's fun, and I'm glad they made it available for console users as well. You know, what's the price on this one?
$30. What do you think?
Yeah, it's solid. I'd give it a $30. Like, if you're a fan of mystery games, and games where you really have to, like, just think things through, this is a solid title for that.
Cool. All right, next up is Ember, developed by Muse Games, published by Curve Digital, released September 23rd on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, Stadia, and out of early access on Steam for $19.99. Ember is a frantic firefighting game set in a hyper-capitalist reality where emergency services are a thing of the past. Scale buildings, smash windows, fight fires, and save lives alone or with up to four players. Serlina checked this one out, wrote in a review, this is what she's got to say. Hey there, SML friends and fam, it's Serlina, and I'm reviewing Ember for the Xbox One. In Ember, you play as a firefighter, and it's your job to quell those pesky fires, rescue your clients, and maybe even relieve them of their valuables. Hey, you do you and enjoy it. Let's get to the review. Not much story in Ember, y'all. This is all action. As I said, you're a firefighter, but you can't go out untrained. There's a decent tutorial to be completed before you what?
Can I interrupt for a second?
Yeah.
Did I hear correctly that, that you relieve them of their possessions?
Of their valuables, yes.
So you're a firefighter that could rob people?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay, continue.
Let's find out how. There's a decent tutorial to be completed before you release to the world. You'll learn the basic movements, left stick to move, right stick to look around, how to use the tools at your disposal, so on and so forth. You start out with your fire hose and axe, a ladder, and a finder, which you'll use to find your clients. Once you complete the tutorial, you'll be able to complete your first mission. Because this is an action game, let's talk about the controls. Whoo, those controls. For pretty sure this is the same engine used to run games like Team Fortress, so the movement controls are really loose and really, really fast. That's fine on PC, but on console, if you aren't used to it, you'll have to deal with some things. For example, you get turned around a lot. You'll miss items that you'll need to pick up frequently. You may even get motion sickness. I'm used to this, but even I had a bit of a headache when I stopped playing. Graphically, it's bright and bubbly. Unfortunately, you can only see the hands of your character, but the world around you is full of interesting things like 50s-inspired decor and clients who run around while on fire or just stand there and play on their cell phones while a fire is going on. I guess no one could really unplug, can they? The music is actually pretty decent as well. It was lively and upbeat, which is an interesting choice since everything around you is burning. Let's talk about the gameplay. This is the meat and potatoes of the game. The gameplay is actually pretty good once you get used to the controls. Putting out fires is immensely fun, but for the first portion of the game, putting out fires isn't your main priority. Your main priority is rescuing your clients. In order to rescue, you have to grab them with X and literally carry them out of the building to the rescue zone, which is hilariously filled with mattresses and pillows, but it's not as easy as that sounds. Unless you put out a fire completely, it will continue to spread. There's a good and bad portion to putting out a fire, if it's not your main objective. It takes time to put out fire, so during that time you could be putting your clients in danger. Your clients can get hurt, burned, even die, and if you don't rescue a certain number, you fail the job. Now, if you don't take the time to put out the fire and only clear a path, if you attempt to take the same path, the fire will have surged and taken over that path. Another aspect of the game is water management, especially in the beginning. See, if you use your fire hose to put out the fire, you'll use water and need to replenish. In the beginning, you can only do this by using a water source inside the house. The water source is finite, so if you use it all, you're SOL and have to hope to find another water source. You also have health, and the health mechanic is interesting. Okay, let's say you're getting burned. Your health bar will turn red first, then black. The red portion will return over time, but the black portion is gone for good. I found myself playing around with that mechanic. There's also surprises like sprinklers, electricity play, explosive barrels, and other things to enhance your firefighting experience. Not to mention there's a shop where you can upgrade your firefighting gear or just buy stuff to pimp out your fighter. Not to mention there's several game modes you can unlock like salvage, low damage, and even multiplayer. Of course, I have no friends, so no multiplayer for me. But I'll play with you, Surly. Just hit me up. I'll play with you. Ember is available right now on the Xbox One for $19.99. But is currently on sale for $15.99 for the next 7 days. And should you buy this? Yes, this is a buy it for me. I had so much fun in this game that it's almost illegal. There's a ton of content here, so it'll keep your attention for a good while, assuming you could get a handle on the way the engine runs. Sounds good. She didn't go into how you steal shit though.
Disappointing. I really want to know that.
I'll have to ask
maybe
her.
Maybe it's something like you rescue the people and then you can re-enter the burning building and then you just grab their shit and don't give it to them.
Probably. I'm just assuming that you take whatever the hell you want and use it to buy upgrades.
Makes sense.
I mean, the house is burning. Fucking free-for-all, right? Mm-hmm. Yellow. Next game is Skeletal Avenger, developed and published by 10 Tons, released September 28th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $16.99. Guide a skull-chucking skeletal warrior on a quest for vengeance. Skeletal Avenger is a hack and slash where you'll build a new playstyle with perks each run. The ultimate goal is revenge, but first you need to master deadly tools and learn to defeat peculiar enemies. Jacob, tell us about Skeletal Avenger.
So this is a weird one. It's pretty much like a roguelite version of Torch. Oh, God. I'm going to mess it up. Torchlight. And so you're just running around. Like, so you get resurrected by this necromancer and he's just like, oh, good. Like, you're the first one that's awake. And you get to decide which kind of level you're going to go to. And like, there's various settings like easy, medium, hard. There might be something else. I unfortunately was not good enough to reach anything above hard. But so you go through the levels and you get various perks as you go through and explore. And as you have to go through, you have to defeat enemies. And once you've defeated all of the enemies on a certain level, it presents you with multiple exits. And the exits are each different, and they give you different, it's not like storylines, but I guess like a different map method of how to get to the end quest, like the end quest, which is really just defeat the boss. And once you defeat the boss, you get these bloodstones that you have to return to the necromancer that raised you up. And you get other stuff. And then you just go on to the next mission. Now, if you die during your mission, you lose a bunch of your crap. and then another skeleton gets raised, and you can decide how that's like which skeleton you're going to choose based on various like stats for them and abilities, and you just wash, rinse, repeat throughout. The gameplay is pretty solid. I like the different variety of perks and the, like, you know, different attacks that you can do. And it's just, you keep going through it. Now, if you're not really a fan of roguelites, the game can be frustrating. I'm not going to lie. Like, I die during easy missions. But
me too. It happens.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, that's what happens, like, in roguelikes.
Yeah, like sometimes there are levels where it's just like the healing areas are few and far between, which I was vaguely annoyed by, like that, you know, there weren't like potions or stuff like that scattered on the levels. Instead, you just have to hope for these blood fountains to just randomly be there, and you can't return to levels that you were previously at, even though there's stairs of like, there's clearly stairs that you walked up, but you're not allowed to walk back down said stairs, which I thought was a little odd. But yeah, you just go through and, oh, and the other mechanic, I forgot, you can toss your head.
Yes, yes, you know, you can.
You're an undead skull guy, and of course, some of your perks are actually based around how your skull throw works. Like, you can attach like fire damage or lightning damage to the skull that you're tossing at your enemies, which you then have to run over and pick up to continue your mission. The difficulty I was a little like about, but it's a solid game. So if you're looking for a challenge, Skeletal Avenger is a pretty good choice, like through and through.
Well, $17. What do you think of it?
For $17, I wouldn't be mad with it. As I said, I wasn't too thrilled with the difficulty on it, especially like on easy levels. But if you're looking for a challenge and you like the gameplay of something like Torchlight, absolutely go for this. I definitely recommend it.
Sweet. All right, yeah. You're done.
Cool. I mean, I was really pleased with this week's games that I got to review. I'm like, it was an oddly solid week on that. So.
Yeah, there was some good stuff. Hot Wheels, Monkey Ball are both really, really, really good games. Adam's Family is a lot better than it had any right to be.
Yeah, it is.
Like, PHL Collective did a really good job on that one.
Yeah. I'm really hoping that that game gets recognized by people and it does well. I really do. So.
Well, all right. Well, I'm going to let you get going. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Not really. I mean, like, I finally actually am watching the chat, and I actually regret watching the chat. Like, yeah, I do get roasted on this thing, don't I?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, regularly.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, have a good night, everyone.
All right, moving on. Aki's here. Aki, how are you doing?
I am living for the moment.
That's fantastic. That's it? Just your living?
Yeah. I was just playing video games, and then I had to stop playing video games.
Why?
Because I had to be on here, and I can only do so much at the same time.
You would think, though. Well, you want to do your reviews?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Next game to talk about. I'm going to butcher the name of this one, too. Get ready, people. Xuan Yuan Sword 7, developed by Softstar Entertainment and Domo Studio, published by East Asia Soft, released September 30th on Xbox One and PS4 for $49.99. Welcome to an action RPG with frenetic real-time combat, visceral 3D presentation, and a rich cinematic narrative. It's a celebration of ancient China's landscape, civilization, and culture infused with the mystique of its own legends in stark contrast to an anachronistic technological designs. It is a world that is both familiar and mysterious, one of both science and spirituality, and one that is waiting to be explored. Aki, tell us about your time with this one.
It was pretty fantastic. You play as I think his name is Taishi, because I've already forgotten it because it's not used too much.
Taishi Zhao.
Okay. I thought I was right. I know I've heard it enough. I should know. he was originally the son of a high-ranking government official, basically, who was betrayed. And now he lives as a hunter with his little sister, Ziying. and bad things happen, and he has to save her. Well, less save her, more create a new body for her, because he only has her soul. Because he's, you know, a competent brother. And along the way, he destroys multitudes of monsters and some asshole soldiers who are assholes. It's the best way to call them. They're just asshole soldiers.
You have a way with words. You're going to make up for Cole not cursing on the show all the time.
Yes. Yes, I am. Because I don't think I've ever gotten through a review without cussing. So that's never going to happen, I don't think.
Okay, we're keeping you off when the important people come by.
Yeah, probably a good idea. Yeah.
So, tell us more about this one.
Okay.
It's a gorgeous game, too. Like, I was impressed by the visuals in this one. It has a stunning graphics engine. It looks really good.
Yeah, it's very, very pretty. Everything, even fighting, is very pretty. Because you play as just Taishi. You only play as him, but you also get two followers, more or less. One being your little sister, another being your childhood friend. Neither of these shock you in the game, so it's not like I'm... You know, it's played up when you figure out, oh, this is your childhood friend a little bit, but it's kind of glaringly obvious if you just think about it for like 2 seconds, just from how the game leads up. And they're both fighting with you at the same time, at all times, basically. So as Taishi, you actually get martial arts that you learn throughout the game that you get to use, which gives you access to new ways of fighting. You always have your quick, real fast sword swings, but you can also get, technically there's 8 total martial arts. 4 of them are proper martial arts. The ox form, the wolf form, the tiger form, and the bear form, which all change up basically power moves, heavy attacks. They all do different things. Like the ox form allows you to basically do more damage to the stagger meter for enemies, whereas the wolf form allows them to get bleed damage, things like that. So each one has its own way of fighting. And then you get 3 special ones, or 4 special ones technically, 3 that are based off of monster enemies that you beat, 2 of them being optional, and then the last one you get in New Game Plus. So I'm not even going to bother mentioning that one, because you can figure that out on your fucking own. But the 2 girls have their own fighting style, and they have 2 different special moves that you can equip to each one, but they don't really super matter. Your little sister shoots little magic bolts at enemies. She's basically going, fireball, fireball, and that's it. And then your childhood friend uses dual swords to just quickly just mow through things. And the allies aren't shit in the game. They're not shit. I don't know if y'all understand this, but they're not shit. They're actually good.
That's impressive in an RPG.
I know, right? They don't use any healing items. They don't pick anything up, but they don't take any healing items. They don't use healing items. I don't know if you even can heal them. If they get defeated, they're on a timer that's like, I think, 70 seconds or something, and then they pop right back up unless you finish the fight beforehand, in which case they immediately pop back up. It's like, they're amazing. And honestly, the childhood friend, once I got them, they cut through enemies faster than I could. they were doing better than me.
Nice.
The little sister does not, but that's kind of what you expect when she's casting fireball, basically, and you're just up there stabbing motherfuckers. So, but most of the enemies you fight in this are different types of monsters, be it mutated wolves or giant just behemoth creatures or zombie type enemies, things like that. But the enemy soldiers that you fight use specialized weapons, and they often come in pairs or more, and they just keep getting stronger and stronger throughout the game. But really, the game just comes down to you're trying to save your sister by getting her a body back. That's it. That's like the entire crux of the story. There are other things that happen, but that is the main character. That is what he is doing. He's like, oh, yeah, I guess I can save the world along with it, but I'm really only doing it because I want my sister to have a body back. I don't care about the rest of this shit. This is someone else's job. This isn't mine. I'm just a hunter now. That's his entire personality. He's like, I don't want to do this.
He cares about nothing else. He's just like, I just want money for my sister. Just
yeah,
save the world now. I don't give a shit. Like, you guys do that. I just, can I have like bread?
Yeah, like the very first thing you do in the game, it basically is you're working for the asshole soldiers, and your character knows they're asshole soldiers because they did some bad things to your family, which is why you live with your sister as a hunter instead of a government official. And you know this, but you're like, eh, it doesn't help me to fight with these people. It helps me to get them to pay me to do things. So you just work for them, even though you should hate them. And it's just because you want to help your sister. That's it. That's your entire livelihood here, is help sister make money. The end. And it's just a repeating circle there. That is his entire plot for this entire game, is I just want to help my sister. I don't really care about the rest of the shit. Can we just not do this, please?
And on the bright side, the stuff is there to do. Like, this is a fully fleshed out. There's lots of content in this game. It's impressive that, like, most people are used to East Asia Soft releasing the smaller indie, quick completion indies. And this is like a legit, serious, full-fledged hardcore RPG.
Yeah, I played this on easy. Well, I switched it between easy and normal on a regular basis because the bosses were too hard for me to beat on normal, but the normal enemies were too pathetic on easy. So I kept switching them. It took me almost 30 hours to 100% this game.
Wow.
Yeah. And obviously I haven't even gone through New Game Plus. Granted, there's only... You only take over two things, seemingly, into New Game Plus: your level and a specialized weapon that comes with its own martial art. And that seems to be all you carry over, because I looked at my inventory and stuff, and
hey, kids.
Nothing. And I was really kind of upset with that, because I painstakingly went and made every single item you can make in the game, which you don't have to do. I just wanted to do it, because I was like, I just want to have everything. And then I saw there was New Game Plus. I'm like, oh, hell yeah. I just get to play the game with all this kick-ass amazing stuff. And no, you don't. And I was like, oh. But it doesn't matter that much. It's whatever.
Yeah. Well, overall, $50 on this one. What are you thinking?
Oh, I'm totally for this. This is a nice long game. There's four different difficulties you can choose from. I don't know why you would choose any of the harder ones, because the bosses are so fucking hard. There's a really cool mini game in it, Zao Chess, which is a fantastic game. It's kind of like Go, except for a lot more strategic. And there's not a lot in the way of side quests. So almost everything there is to do in this very sizable game is mostly main quest stuff. And all the side quest stuff, none of it's like, oh, go over here and collect 50 of this and then bring it back. It's like, oh, go kill a couple of these enemies for me. And that's it. It's all very basic, simple stuff that you do in just like 5 minutes max. It's fantastic. I really like it. And the voice acting is amazing.
Yeah. Cool. Seems like you like this one.
Oh, I love it. It's all fantastic. Right.
Well, moving on, next game we're going to talk about, I'm going to do another email. Teacup, developed by Smarto Club, published by Whitethorn Digital, released September 23rd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, Steam, and Epic Game Store for $9.99. Teacup is a short and wholesome narrative adventure game with a focus on exploration and non-linear non-linear progression, can't talk, help a small and shy frog on her journey to find the ingredients she needs for her tea party. Serlina covered this one, wrote in another review. This is what she's got to say. Hello, SML lovelies. It's your girl, Serlina, and I'm reviewing Teacup for the Xbox One. Teacup is a narrative adventure game where you play as the titular character who's in search of ingredients to have a most excellent tea party. Let's get on to the review. As previously stated, you're Teacup and you're a very cute little froggy girl living in an anthropomorphic world. The game starts off with Teacup remembering that she has a tea party to host the following day, but she has nothing left in her pantry. So she leaves her home with her trusty tea notebook in search of the teas. Yes, this is the plot. Along the way, you'll have the opportunity to talk to a myriad of people who make up Teacup's world. Some are helpful, some are just there for flavor, and some are folks whom you'll need to help out in order to get the ingredients you need. Since this is narrative driven, I won't discuss the story much, but there's not that much else to it, honestly. You'll have some cute and fun conversations with the town folk. A decent chunk of the flavor text was chuckle-worthy as well. On to the gameplay. You'll be walking, pointing, and clicking. There are a couple mini games here to be had, but the most challenging one was definitely making all the vegetables fit in a veggie stand Tetris style. The other mini games will test your memory and ability to input commands correctly. No rocket science feats need to be performed. Gameplay isn't difficult at all, though you may trip up here and there depending on what aspect you aren't that great at. Next up are the graphics. It's retro style, but still cute. I would describe it as Atari-like with the Genesis motherboard in it. What? So the colors are pretty muted, but all the pixels look nice and tight. Aesthetically, it was very pleasing for me. I just liked a lot of the outfits that the townies wore. Teacup in particular was just adorable in her little flared dress. There is a spot of music and VA in the game as well. When you talk to the townies, they make cute little aha sounds. And the background music does change depending on what area you're in. It helps set the ambiance nicely. Teacup is available right now on the Xbox One for $9.99, and should you buy it, it's a decent try it for me. The game isn't really for an adult. It's very family friendly, which is completely fine, especially if you have young children who shouldn't be exposed to blood and guts at their tender ages. If you're looking for a game to keep the kiddos busy for a while, this would be it. They'll be wanting to see how many things they can bump into for flavor text. For adults, not much is here except for a chill experience for 2 hours and an easy 1K gamer score. That's worth $10 to you. No reason why you shouldn't buy it. If not, maybe wait for a sale. Works for me. It's a cute one. I'm enjoying this one. It's just adorable. Looks like something you would play.
Style. Yeah, it looks. I looked at it while you were talking about it, and it's a very cute art style. I have to say, I do like the art style.
It's adorbs. All right, next game is Rover Mechanics Simulator, developed by Pyramid Games, published by Ultimate Games, released September 22nd on Xbox One for $13.99. Rover Mechanics Simulator is a game in which you are a mechanic working on one of the first Martian colonies. Your main tasks include the repair and maintenance of Mars rovers, so that the remaining crew can collect detailed information about the structure of the planet. Aki, tell us about Rover Mechanics Simulator.
Okay. Sadly, I haven't figured out how to break this one yet.
Oh.
I'm working on it still. It falls in the same pit trap that all these do. Resources, money, management. I hate it. I'd prefer if you just had a few trillion dollars and you could just piss it away happily.
You just want easy mode on these games.
Yeah, to me, it's more fun when you can just sit there and do whatever than, like, I have to make money. The making money part of it is so boring to me. I just want to have the fun of doing this and not have to worry about this stuff.
I'm the same way. Like, when I played SimCity on the Super Nintendo, I would always use the money cheat.
Damn straight.
I just want to build shit and watch my town progress, and I don't want to stress out about finances. I just, let me have fun.
Exactly. That's how I feel about these games. It's just like, this one, your resource is resource instead of money. So they've just switched out the name. It's the same bullshit, though, sadly. In this, you're fixing various types of rovers. There's a number of different types and a few different companies as well, just like most of these games. Yay! I'm going to compare this to the Mech Mechanic Simulator because they're really well comparable, even though they're made by different people. This one, I think, did better with some of its mechanics when you're taking apart rovers and stuff. In it, when you click on an item, it like most of these, it'll show you, oh, if you can't take it apart, it'll show you why by highlighting the things that you have to take off first. But unlike lots of them, when you're taking out things that have screws and shit, you don't have to sit there and hover over the screw and take out one screw and then hover over the next screw and take out that screw and then hover over the... And it says, no, fuck that. And it just says, okay, this has screws in it. Hover over this part, click A, and then just hold X, and it'll just take out each fucking screw for you one at a time. And it's like, oh, thank you. Thank you so goddamn much. I love that. Thank you. And that's great. One of its main issues for me anyways, and I was spoiled, I think, is when you find out, obviously, like all of these, there's something broken in the fucking thing. You have to go in and find it and fix the fucker. That's the whole point of the game, of all these games. It's a mechanic game. You have to fix things. It's part of life. In some of them, they highlight what the broken piece is, and you just have to get into the machine, get to it, rip it the fuck out and fix it, or buy a new one and reinsert it. And this one, it doesn't highlight until your much later game, because there is an ability, an upgrade you can get that does it. Kind of effectively. And it's just like, I would just prefer if it was lit up, because I took one thing apart so down to it barely had anything on it, because I was trying to find one fucking engine and I didn't know where the fucking engine was, because it was it wasn't the main engine for the thing. It was one of the tiny little motors, and I'm like, I don't know which one of these, because I kept grabbing motors, and it's like, oh, this isn't the right kind of motor even. And then I found ones that were it, but those were the last ones I pulled, and I was like, but that one's okay. And this one's okay. And this one, I had literally taken it down to where there was only like four or five fucking pieces left on the damn thing before I found the fucking piece that was broken. I was like, I hate this. Because that was like a half hour just taking shit apart. Oh, I was shit. Like, oh, you motherfucker. And then I started looking at the fucking trees, because I was like, there has got to be something here for this.
Oh my God.
And yeah, there's one that I'll get in a few more levels up that'll highlight anything that's under a certain percentage of good, which is the first upgrade's 15%. I don't know what the second upgrade is, but there's two or three upgrades for it. I'm just like, I can't wait to fucking get that. That way it'll automatically be highlighted and I'll know where the piece of shit part is, so I can fucking take it out and just get this shit done. It's like, I really like that part. That makes it so much easier to do.
Well, overall, this one's only hanging out at the $14 range. What are you thinking of this one?
I think it's worth it. I do overall enjoy the game. It's not a bad game. It just, I would like it to modify some of its mechanics a little. That's all. Yeah.
And give us a sandbox mode to just fuck around.
Yeah, all these games should not just have sandbox mode. They just should just be sandboxes, just in general.
Cool. Well, that's it for you. Let you get going. I got one more review to take care of with my buddy Glenn Case. So do you have any final words before we move on?
No, only that I wish people would stop being able to claim the code so goddamn quick. It's just so fast. By the time I got it fucking posted into the redeem area, it was already gone. I'm like, you fucker. Too fast people in here, and I ain't one of them. That's it. Just me bitching. That's the end.
All right. And final game to talk about tonight. We are bringing in our good friend, Glenn Case. How are you doing, Glenn?
I am hanging in there besides some technology issues. But, you know, other than that, life is groovy. How about yourself, Joe Cam?
The backbone of this show is technological issues. So...
Well, I'm glad that I can keep that running, then.
Yeah, so how are you doing? How's things going?
I am chaotically crazy, but in a good way. I'm doing a theme that I will not say here for my No Fake Friday videos. I'm doing a theme for October, but I guess I will go as far as to say that I'm dressing up in a costume.
Oh, no. And so
all of my October videos for my No Fake Friday thing will be all in the same costume. I'm therefore editing five videos at once, and it's made for a very interesting experience.
Oh, geez. Well, I can't wait to see those. But for now, you got a review to take care of. Are you ready for this?
I am. I believe so. I've spent a fair amount of hours on it.
Cool. Well, the final game to talk about tonight is called The Amazing American Circus, developed by Juggler Games and Klebaiter, published by Klebaiter, released September 16th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $19.99. Roll up and play a deck-building game like no other. Gather weird and wonderful performers, amaze audiences, explore Gilded Age America, and transform your rundown circus into an entertainment empire. Play your cards right, and you could claim the crown of the greatest showman from P.T. Barnum himself. Glenn, tell us about your time with The Amazing American Circus.
Play your cards right is exactly the right idea. So, I mean, if Magic the Gathering is something that you enjoy, and you're taking off hit points off of things that you're, you know, hitting, this is the same sort of concept, the same setup, except instead of killing things, you're trying to entertain people. And so you're wearing them down. They're booing and throwing tomatoes and like that sort of stuff. And you've got to entertain them. You've got to wear them down to where they're like, okay, they did a good job. You know, you get them to applaud.
And grudgingly this game, accept you.
Exactly how it works. And I will tell you, this game was kicking my, can I say kicking my ass? That's allowed, right?
Yeah, you could say ass.
Yeah, okay, kicking my ass. It was kicking my ass. To where I've had to restart the game 4 to 5 times because I think it's the most difficult towards the beginning, because you start off, you're learning how the game works, and really, like most of these deck building games, it's about finding the right killer combination of cards that will work well off of one another so you can overwhelm your opponents. And until you find that, you're going to have a bad day. It's a bad time for a while there. But then when I started getting a hang of how the game worked and I started seeing a little bit of success, it is shockingly deep what you have going on, because you're not just building the decks. You have your performers that if you're traveling from town to town, you have to be able to feed them. You have to think about the money that you've made from a performance. What are you going to use that money to upgrade? Because there's all sorts of upgrades where you can have, you can hire more performers. You can make it to where the performers that you're going to have will have better cards. You can have it to where, you get better food to feed them so they feel better between performances. If the performer is, got a negative status, like, you could say like that maybe they are feeling stage fright. That's a thing that will work against you to where you won't have as many hit points. They don't call them hit points, but it's hit points. And it's a lot of juggling for that. Once you do get past the learning curve of learning how everything works, however, it is pretty rewarding. As far as these sort of games go, I can't say that I've played a lot of them, but I really started to get into it once it started making more sense.
And seems like a really, I know it's kind of overused, but it seems like a really unique game in that yes. It's not just a card battler, but it's also just like a really deep circus simulator as well.
Yes. Yes. And I was shocked at how many of the characters that you are interacting with are real people from human history. This takes place, I believe, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, I believe. And these characters that you're interacting with, in many cases, are real people from that era. You will go up against, in the South, the Ringling Brothers, for example, and it's based on the real people. So that was kind of surprising and satisfying in a weird way. But I would say that I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to. For the second time in a row, I looked into this thinking it wasn't going to be like that. It was going to be something I didn't enjoy much, but then I put the time in. I learned how the system worked. A key thing that if you are playing this to keep in mind is that there's a magnifying glass that will uncover portions of the map. And I didn't realize that you could move that magnifying glass freely and pay a fee to expose part of the map. I thought that it was something where it would only work on cities that you had been to. And not knowing that was, it got to a point where I was maybe 2/3 through the first map and I didn't know what to do next. And it was because I had to uncover portions of it that I hadn't been to. That was huge. I will say that it is only a single player experience at this point. I don't know if they have any plans to put in a multiplayer, but if you are the sort of person like me, I don't particularly enjoy playing online against other people. So for me,
neither. See, other people suck.
So if you are that type of player who enjoys a deep single player experience, this is the game for you. If you are wanting that multiplayer part of it, you may want to wait for something else. I will say that.
I do dig the visuals in the game as well. It's got that nice hand-drawn style to it.
Yes, and you do have the ability to skip over portions of it that you've seen before, but rather than skipping the whole thing, it just goes through faster to where normally you'd be pressing A to see each bit of dialogue, and there is voice acting as well. But you would normally press A to go through each bit. If you hit B, then it'll go through all of it just a little bit faster. It doesn't skip it entirely. Mm. I thought that was an interesting bit. But yeah, no, there's a lot of silly involved in this too, without going too crazy into it. Pretty early on, you end up running into a safe cracking chicken and you get to recruit that safe cracking chicken. You get to play. He/she is one of my favorite characters, to play as. And the cards that you get are just absolutely ridiculous.
Did you name it?
No, he comes with a name, actually, and I'm now blanking on what his name is, but that'll be a surprise for people, too. But the cards are based on the Fibonacci sequence. So if the number of cards that are in the discard pile happen to be a number of the Fibonacci sequence, then you can play the card. It's utterly ridiculous. So portions of it are based on reality, and then other portions of it are based on things like safe-cracking chickens.
Oh, Lord.
And for me, it's a great balance. It's a great balance. Now, there is one thing. I was concerned when it came to playing in the South. This is after the Civil War, but not that long after. I'm like, am I going to be playing for like slave owners? Is that going to be a thing?
Oh, no.
Because there's not. Thankfully, I can say, no, you do not. You do end up actually playing for Booker Washington, who is, you know, a important person in the history of African-American history. There are Indians, however, that they did throw in like the war cry, but not over the top headdress style stuff. I got a little uncomfortable with that too, where I thought I have Native American friends that I don't know how they would react to this part.
No.
But
it's always touchy with subject matter and trying to be accurate to the time, but trying to be sensitive to today. It's a tough balance.
I would say that's exactly it. I would say from my standpoint, obviously I'm not Native American, so, you know, your mileage may vary, but from my standpoint, it seemed like they hit a reasonably decent balance that started going towards maybe being a little uncomfortable, but not ridiculously so. They could have gone a lot further, but there is like a war cry. There are not like an over the top headdress. They're dressed in like city clothes, so there's that. But that would be one of the only parts where I was questioning it.
Overall, it sounds like a decent experience. So for $20, oh, yeah. What are you thinking?
I've gotta go, and I would say for the first 10 hours of playing this, I was gonna say it was a try it. Also because I've run into glitches, but now for the second time in a row, I've brought the glitches to the developer's attention and they're going to fix it.
Nice.
And that's so incredibly cool. I've got to go buy it on this because they're trying something different that not everybody else is doing. And I feel like that's the sort of thing that should be rewarded with your hard-earned dollars. If you enjoy deck-building games, this one's worth checking out at the very least. But I'd say, yeah, pick it up. It's worth the money.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Glenn, thank you so much for coming on and doing your thing. Thanks to everyone else who came on and did their thing. Jacob and Aki doing their reviews and talking with me and blah, 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 all that other crap. You know what that means. Big thanks to Cooley Callahan at Polyarc for coming on and chatting Moss 2 with us. Glenn, you are going to want to keep your eyes open for that game since you have a PSVR. Have you played the original Moss?
Not yet, but I was thinking if there's a possibility that I might be playing the sequel, then maybe I'll do a review of both of them.
Oh, there you go. Because if we get the second, now I don't know when the second one's coming. They don't have any kind of release date on it, but when it shows up.
I sincerely thought that it looked really cool, that first one, and it's one of them I'd been meaning to try. I just haven't set the time aside to do it yet.
We got to get you set up with Moss.
Yeah, it looks amazing. And at the time when I saw the previews for that game, I thought, okay, I may need to get a VR now. That I didn't get it at that time, but it was one of those ones in the back of my head. I'm like, yeah, I may have to get a VR. And then it was Tetris that did it for me.
Ah, there's another good one. See, okay, I had a PlayStation VR and we ended up selling it because I never used it. And then we got offered an interview and a chance to review Moss, and I bought another PSVR. I was like, I'm not missing this one. This one looks way too good for our show to pass up. So I ended up picking up another PSVR, and I'm sure when Moss 2 comes along, I'll be like, fuck, honey. I think we need a PSVR again. Hopefully we hear more about the PSVR 2 by then.
Yes. No, I imagine it might be nice to get the upgrade instead.
Yeah. And hopefully everything works.
Yeah, like most of these things, you know, at first that they've got to iron out the bugs, but hopefully it's something where they do and it'll be good.
Yeah, hope so. But anyway, yeah, that's the end of this episode. Big thanks to everyone for coming on. At Cooley's request, we're going to play some Tiberian Sun's Hell March. What do you think of that?
It sounds fantastic to me. Let's go with it.
All right. Do you have any final words to end the show?
My final words are final words.
Smart. I like it.